This is a production of the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies. For more original Torah content, visit elmad.pardes.org.
Hey, good evening. Four stories, one of them will be connected to Tu Bishvat. Unfortunately, I cannot teach it today. We'll wait for next week for Tu Bishvat story. So out of the around 1,000 stories which are scattered all around in rabbinic literature, a great number belong to our subject today, public affairs. Relationship between rabbis and colleagues, between rabbis and students, and between rabbis and the common people. Most of the texts are taken from Eretz Israeli, Palestinian sources, like the Talmud Yerushalmi, and Lamentation Rabbah, and Leviticus Rabbah, and Genesis Rabbah. Only one or two will be from the Bavli. And I think that we don't need any introduction, but go straight to the one of the stories, the last one, number 7, which deals with a problem. People speak about impeachment, right? Let's say about impeachment. Tanu Rabbanan, our rabbis taught, Keshe'anasi nichnas, when the Nasi, the patriarch, comes into the Beit Midrash, all the people rise and do not resume the seats until he requests them to sit. Well, when the Av Bedin is the head of the judicial system, the court, when he comes in, so one row rises on one side, like these people sitting here, and another row on that side, and they remain standing until he has sat down in his place. Okay? So make a distinction between the patriarch and the Av Beit Din. But when the Chacham enters, and I mentioned already our first meeting that Chacham has nothing to do with IQ or with knowledge. Chacham is the formal function, the head of the educational system. The Bate Midrash, the schools, whatever. When the Chacham enters, he's number 3 in the hierarchy. Everyone whom he passes rises and sits down as soon as he passes until the sage has sat down in his place. Something which is called a wave, I think, in the baseball game. I love to go. Once a year I see a baseball game. I'm a Yankees fan, and I love the waves that they are being. Just the wave. So you see the difference between the Nasi, the Av Beit Din, and the Chacham. Each is respected in a different way. Rabbi Yochanan said, that instruction was issued in the days of Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel. Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel, that's the middle of the 2nd century CE. When Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel was the Nasi, Rabbi Meir was the Chacham, and Rabbi Natan the Av Beit Din. Three figures are playing in this story. Whenever Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel entered, all the people stood up for him. When Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Natan entered, all the people stood up for them also. That was before this new instruction. Said Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, should there be no distinction between my office and theirs? Don't laugh. I think it's very nice. It reminds me, if I ever told you the story about me and Professor Katzir, I didn't mention that, right? I always used to laugh at this point, but I remember something that back in 1973, I was the secretary of the World Congress of Jewish Studies. And in the opening ceremony, President Katzir, I think it was him, yeah, he honored us by coming to speak. And on the stage, he said to Professor Katzir, and then the president of the university, and the president of the Congress, Professor Urbach, and some other people, and the secretary was sitting on the side. And we stood behind the curtain and waited for the trumpets to ta-da-ta-da-ta-da-ta-da-ta-da-ta-ta. And for the announcement, please stand up for the president of the State of Israel. So I made one step forward, and Katzir told me, wait, they are not standing yet. Not everybody is standing yet. Okay, and later we had Kabbalat Panim, the reception, and the president, bothered to come to me, what we asked after all, and told me, see, they're not standing up for Ephraim Katzir. They're standing up for the president of the State of Israel. And this honor I cannot just put aside. So I learned the idea. He's the Nasi. He wanted everybody to know that it's not for him, it's for the function, for his status. So he said, there should be no distinction between my office and theirs, and so he issued that audience. What was the problem? Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Natan were not present on that day. That's what should be considered unfair. Unfair. He used the fact that they were not there in order to issue a new rule how people behave. Okay, now what happened now? Coming on the following day, I'm reading the English because the original is basically in Aramaic. Coming the following day and seeing that the people did not write for them as usual, they inquired as to what had happened. On being told that Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel had issued that ordinances, thank you, Rabbi Meir said to Rabbi Natan, I am the Chacham and you are the Avbidin. Let us retaliate, yeah. Now, how are we to proceed against him? Let us request him to discourse upon the tractate of Uktzin, with which he is unfamiliar. Uktzin is a small tractate at the end of Seder Taharot. This deals with a very complicated issue of Tum'ah and Tahara, of purity and impurity, and it was not part of the curriculum, and people did not study that because at that time only 4 of the 6 Masachtot were studied, both in Eretz Israel and in Babel. Not the same 4, but only 4 were studied. So Uktzin, which was a small tractate at the end of Taharot, really nobody knew. But let's ask him to teach us Uktzin, and as he will be unable to discourse upon it, we shall then depose him, and I shall become Avbedin and you the Nasi. That's cruel plan of impeachment, right? So the story goes on. Rabbi Yaakov ben Korshai, on hearing this conversation, said, the matter might, God forbid, lead to the Nazi's disgrace. So what can he do? He could go to the Nazi and tell him what's happening. On the other hand, he wanted the Nazi to be aware of the plot against him. So he went and sat down behind Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel's study, expounding the tractate of Uktzin and repeating it again and again, all night. He was sitting there and repeating Uktzin, 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 all night. He, Rabban Gamliel, said, what could this mean? Did anything, God forbid, happen at the college? He concentrated his attention and familiarized himself with it. On the following day, when they say to him, I think with the green, you know, will the master come and discourse on Uktzin? Okay. He began and discourse upon it. After he had finished, he said to them, had I not familiarized myself with it, you would have disgraced me. He gave the order and they were removed from the college, kicked out of the Beit Midrash. Think about it. Rabbi Meir, one of the greatest scholars of his time, and Rabbi Natan were kicked out of the college, of the Beit Midrash. But the story doesn't end here. Thereupon they, Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Natan, wrote down scholastic difficulties on slip of paper, which they threw into the college. That's the earliest facts I'm aware of. So a slip of paper, and they sent the questions into the college. That which he, Rabban Gamliel, solved was disposed of, and as to those which he did not solve, he was not a great scholar, you have to understand. He was the Nasi just because he was the firstborn of his father. And, of course, the function of Nasi was hereditary, was part of a shoshelet, a dynasty. So he doesn't have to be the greatest person. I think the only Nasi was really great was Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. He was both Nasi and the greatest scholar of his time. But usually if you look at the history, there's always a tension between the Nasi and the greatest person of his time. Rabban Gamliel, the Yavne, and Rabbi Yoshua, etc., etc. So he was not the greatest scholar, and when he did not know how to answer, they wrote down the answers and threw them in. The last 4 lines in the Hebrew. Amar lahem Rabbi Yosei, Torah mibachutz ve'anu mibefnim. The Torah is outside, and we are inside, within. So said Rabban Gamliel, back to the English, said Rabban Gamliel ben Gamliel, Rabban Shimon, to them, we shall readmit them, but impose upon them this penalty, that no halachic statement shall be reported in their names. As a result, Rabbi Meir was designated others, Rabbi Meir Acherim, and Rabbi Natan, some say, Yesh Omrim. And when you find Acherim Omrim or Yesh Omrim, it could mean that Acherim is Rabbi Meir and Yesh Omrim is Rabbi Natan. And the name Acherim from Rabbi Meir is very meaningful. You know why? He was the student of Elisha ben Avoya, the greatest heretic, who was called Acher. So Rabbi Meir, his student, was now called Acherim, and Rabbi Natan was called just Yesh Omrim as a punishment, penalty for the way they behaved. I think it's a beautiful story because it gives us a true understanding about tension between great scholars. It happens today in universities. Esther is gone. I'm sorry. It may happen in university as well. But the greatest scholars are, I think, the ego may be even greater. And this is a very nice story about ego, Rabbi Meir at least, and Rabbi Natan, and maybe also Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel. And luckily for us, this Rabbi Yeshua, what was his name? Rabbi Yaakov ben Kershai saved everything by the clever way he solved the problem. He did not snitch on his colleagues, but at the same time, he helped Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel to come out of the story not in a disgraceful situation. Any stories on this story? Any questions on this story? Yes, please. You're not a rabbi? Are you a rabbi? Are you a rabbi? Yeah. Because I learned my lesson last week. Okay. And you're not a descendant of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, whatever. It's not family. Okay, please. Was he embarrassed? I'm not sure I answered the question. To learn Torah. I think it wasn't, they didn't have any reason for doing it to embarrass him. No, just studying Torah. They have problems, they ask the questions. When he knew, he knew. When he didn't, they had to suggest the answer. I know, it led. In a way, it hints that Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Natan were greater in Torah than Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. I don't think that they did it purposely. I don't think that they asked questions which they hoped that he would not be able to answer. I don't think so, but the story is before you. As I said more than once, the story is open to interpretation. I don't think that I am the only one to understand the story correctly. So you may understand it differently. Okay? So this was between colleagues, because after all, they're all rabbis. Let's see what happens when the tension is between a rabbi and his younger colleagues. And let's go to text number 4. Number 4, which I find very, very interesting too. This is from the Yerushalmi. Unfortunately, the Yerushalmi is less known to the general public than the Bavli, and we know why. Because the Bavli was always the main text to be studied in yeshivot, in daf yomi, in school, whatever. Who reads Yerushalmi? Okay, this is the story. We look first at the Aramaic. Rabbi Levi v'Yuda bar Nachman. Stop. Two names. One of them is a rabbi, and the second is not a rabbi yet. It's very important to understand. Rabbi Levi, and not yet, Yehuda bar Nachman, let's go to the English, were paid 2 selas for gathering the congregation before Rabbi Yochanan. Let me explain, and those of you who are teachers or speak in public know what I understand. The most important part of a lecture is the first five minutes. If you succeed in the first 5 minutes to catch the audience in his attention, they are yours. But usually, I don't know why, after 4.5 minutes, the door opens, and somebody who was late is coming in. And for reasons which I never understood, he or she has to sit in the last row of the hall, going through the whole hall, and in the way, always dropping a Coca-Cola bell or a pen or a coat. And it happens. Believe me, it happens. And then he sits down, take the coat, look right and left, ask what. I mean, it can ruin the class. That's why, usually in this moment somebody comes in, but... Sorry, but that's my experience. That's why great speakers, preachers, yeah, people come, somebody's peeping in. As if I have planted. Okay. Anyhow, that's why at the time of that time, great speakers, as great performance today, need a warm-up band, right? I don't think that Shlomo Arzi, Lahavdil Madonna, start the evening, but somebody comes in and warm up the people. What's the idea? Because the warm-up band takes time, the people find the place, and then the great entrance of ever. Rabbi Yochanan was one of the greatest lecturers of his time. He used to give a weekly sermon at the synagogue in Tveria, and he would not start before somebody else, like Rabbi Levi or Yudah Bar Nachman, who were paid for that. You see, two selas. We talk about the sela in a second. They were paid for a introduction or whatever words they used to say till Rabbi Yochanan felt that he is ready to come in. So he stood behind the curtain, so to speak, and waited for the people to be together, and then he would come in and give his lecture. The two people are Rabbi Levi and Rabbi and Yudah Bar Nachman, and two selas, as far as we can tell, was a very modest salary, but you could live as on a sela for a week. So if they worked if they alternate, so each every second week each of them gave a small lecture, got small salary, and could live modestly on that for the next 2 weeks. So that's the background for our story about what happened in the synagogue in Tiberia around the year 250. Once, Rabbi Levi entered and gave a sermon. Rabbi Levi came in and gave a sermon, opening with a very interesting statement. Jonah, the son of Amittai, was from the tribe of Asher. If you read the book of Jonah, and all of you did it last Yom Kippur, at least this year, it said that Jonah ben Amittai, it doesn't say anything about his tribe, whatever. Jonah ben Amittai, v'ayi idvar Hashem el Jonah ben Amittai lemor, kum lechel Ninveh. Rabbi Levi is opening with a surprising statement. It's a nice way to start a ceremony, but something people, how can you prove it? And he's proving that Jonah ben Amittai was from the tribe of Asher. Now he's proving to us that, or to them, that he was from Asher. Since it is written that the tribe of Asher did not disinherit the people of Akko and Sidon. It states in the book of Judges that when the people of Israel conquered the land of Israel, each tribe got his inheritance, but they couldn't always kick out all the local people. So the people Asher did not disinherit the people of Akko and Sidon. And it also written, rise and go to Tzarefat, which is near Sidon. This phrase was said to Elijah. Elijah was sent to Tzarefat, which is near Sidon. And by that, we have proved that Jonah came from the tribe of Asher, right? Did we? Do we? All he was saying is that Sidon is in the inheritance of Asher, that Elijah was sent to Tzarefat, which is near Sidon, and I want to hear how can you learn from these two facts that Jonah is from the tribe of Asher? The answer is simple. He didn't finish his lecture. Because in the middle of his words, Rabbi Yochanan, who was standing behind the curtain, came in and slapped him three times. Think about Rabbi Yochanan, the greater Rabbi Yochanan. It's like the biggest professor in philosophy who comes in the middle of a lecture of somebody who just got his PhD, and he comes and says, it's nonsense. Because see what Rabbi Yonatan says. Rabbi Yochanan, entered in the middle and gave a sermon and say, Jonah, the son of Amittai, was from the tribe of Zvulun. He was trying to prove that he was from the tribe of Asher, and he says, no, it's from Zvulun. So first of all, he did not let him finish his discourse. then he's contradicting him in a very rude way, because now he's going to prove from clear biblical verses that Jonah was from Zvulun. It's clearly said in the Bible, if you read your Bible. So what are you telling us about Yonah and Asher? In a second, I have to explain why Rabbi Yochanan behaved the way he did. Why would any professor or great rabbi come in the middle of a lecture and stop him by saying you are wrong? But let's wait for a second. How is he proving it? Jonah, the son of Amittai, was from the tribe of Zvulun. For it is written that the border of the tribe of Zvulun went from Gat Hefer to Itakatzin, the two names of places. And it is also written that God spoke to the prophet Jonah, the son of Amittai, from Gat Hefer. Because Jonah is mentioned also in the book of Kings, 2 Kings chapter 14. And there he is mentioned as coming from Gat Hefer. And if Gat Hefer is part of the inheritance of Zvulun, it's very simple that he is from the Beit Zvulun. And don't give us a whole talk about Yonah and Asher, because he was from Zvulun. In a second, I'll try to explain to you what was so important for Rabbi Yochanan to do such a thing. But let's see how the story ends. Because in another Shabbat, when his turn to speak again was, said Rabbi Levi to Judah Bar Nachman, Titmeratoiv, that's in Yiddish, take the two selas and go and gather the people before Rabbi Yochanan. You take the money. I won't have anything to eat for the next 2 weeks, but I cannot face the people again. Who knows what Rabbi Yochanan is going to do to me this time? Take the money, go inside, and give the talk instead of me. And how clever was this number three, the student? He's not a rabbi yet. He entered and said, how right was Rabbi Yochanan's teaching? Of course, the compliment is to the professor. The compliment is to the rabbi. How great was his teaching? But his mother was from the tribe of Asher. But his father was from the tribe of Zvulun. And he tried to prove that since in the Jewish tradition, as you know, somebody belongs to a tribe, Kohen or Levi, whatever, by his father. So both are right. But Rabbi Levi spoke about his mother from Asher, and Rabbi Yochanan spoke about his father from Zvulun. So both are right, but Rabbi Yochanan is a little more justified, more right, if you can say that, than Rabbi Levi. And harmony was now set back into the Beit Midrash. And in 2 weeks, I think again, Rabbi Levi could come inside, whatever. This story is taught, by the way, in, as far as I know, in school for educations. When they're speaking about Jewish ideas for educators. And the issue here is, of course, the tension in the Chadar Morim. What's Chadar Morim? Teachers, teacher. You know Chadar Morim is. When a new teacher comes, new ideas, how to teach math and how to teach physics and all kind of new ideas. And the old-timer, thank you, do not like these people to start to spread their wings. In the first chance they have, they put him down. Come on, we teach mathematics the way I taught 40 years ago. We know that. And this story speaks about the tension between an old-timer, Rabbi Yochanan, and a newcomer, so to speak, Rabbi Levi, who just was ordained. And number three, the assistant, so to speak, find a way to somehow retain keep the honor of both, whatever. But I'm not very happy for that, because the idea of having different ideas, it's basic for rabbinic life. I mean, that's part of being a student of learning Torah. So the question is, why did Rabbi Yochanan behave the way he did? Why didn't he let Rabbi Levi finish his sermon? And I think that I know what Rabbi Levi wanted to say. And if I'm right, I also know why Rabbi Yochanan did not want him to say that in his synagogue on that very time. In that time, I would say that Rabbi Levi tried to say like that. When Sidon is part of the tribe of Asher, we all agree, right? Elijah was sent to Tzofat, which is near Sidon, right? But let's remember what happened to Elijah, Eliyahu, once he get to this place. He stayed with a woman, a widow, And she took care of his food, whatever. And once her son died, and Elijah revived him, right? By prayer, whatever, revived him. And what Rabbi Levi wanted to say, and you know who is this son? This son is Jonah. He is Jonah, and Elijah revived Jonah. By that, I prove to you that Jonah was from the tribe of Asher. Very nice idea. Rabbi Yochanan knew exactly where Rabbi Levi was heading and did not want it to be said. Now I'll try to explain why. Why would the son of this widow be identified with Jonah? Here we are, have to discuss a bigger question. The fact that the book of the 12 prophets, Treasar, Hosea, Yonah, Michael, whatever, some of these figures, we know nothing about their biography. Who was Ovadia? Who was Habakkuk? No idea. But on the other hand, in the book of Kings, we have figures which miracles were happened to them, and they are meaningless in history. For example, the son of the woman from Shunem, you may remember a woman, she was barren, we spoke about in the first meeting, her husband was an old one, and Elisha, is English in Elisha too? Elisha, whatever English name, whatever. Elisha, the prophet, blessed her, and she was pregnant and got a son. And that's not only miracle that happened to him, because one day, remember, he felt bad and he died, and she put him on the bed, ran to Elisha and complained, "What did you do to me?" And Elisha came back and revived him. What happened to this son? He was born after a blessing of a prophet to a barren woman, like Yitzchak, like Shimshon, like Shmuel, and he was revived from the dead. What happened to him? Nothing. The rabbis understood that it cannot be like that. So they made a connection between him and the book of Habakkuk. And why is that? Because when Elisha is blessing the woman, he says, "Ka'et chaya ve'at choveket ben." In a year from now, you will be embracing or choveket ben. Choveket, Habakkuk. Of course, this story is now the story of birth about Habakkuk. And the prophet Habakkuk is the one whose birth story is being found in the book of Kings. And the rabbis almost systematically did it. They identified Ovadiah, the prophet Ovadiah, with any Ovadiah? Ahav, head of the servants of Ahav, right? Ovadiah Asher Alabait. Ovadiah Asher Labait, in a half time, whatever, did a great thing by hiding 100 prophets of God in a cave and taking care of them. What happened to this guy? He is prophet Ovadiah. And then Micha is the prophet Micha, which is mentioned with connection to Ahav as well. And what about Yonah? When the son of the widow was revived from the dead, she said, "Now I know ki ish Elohim ata udvar Elohim beficha emet." Dvar Elohim beficha emet. Emet means emet. And he's the son of Amittai. You don't need more than that for making the connection. So the idea that you have to find for each of the 12 minor prophets a biography is well spread in rabbinic literature. The same is true about Haggai and Malachi, which is probably Mordecai, even Mordecai is Malachi, and whatever. But what happened here? Why won't Rabbi Yochanan let him say that? Beautiful idea. We have to understand what's happening here. For that, we have to remember where we are standing now in the second, third century Galilee in Tiberia. That's exactly the time, few years before Christianity will become the official religion of the Roman Empire. And you know that Galilee is the birthplace of Christianity. I don't have to tell you that. And if you know the propaganda which Christians used at that time, and Professor Urbach, Professor Urbach wrote a beautiful article on that, the most dangerous book in the Old Testament, as they call it, for propaganda, anti-Jewish or pre-Christian propaganda, was the book of Jonah. Think about the book of Jonah or the Bible. Where do you find in the whole Bible a person who disappears from upon earth and comes back on the third day? Jonah. And you all know that the whale or the big fish is the earliest Christian symbol, even before the cross, because the fish symbolizes death, and Jonah being delivered from the fish symbolizes resurrection, right? More than that, where in the whole Bible you find a Jewish prophet sent to the Gentiles? I'm not saying prophesizing over the Gentiles. Jeremiah did, Isaiah did, all of them spoke against on the Gentiles. But going physically to the Gentiles, and what is Jonah asking from them? Keep kosher? Go to the mikveh? Keep Shabbat? All he asking is to believe in God. Read the book of Jonah. Vayaminu anshei Nineveh. Emunah, believe only. No other demand, just believe in God. And you know that Christianity basically is a religion of belief more than of action. And the people of Nineveh believed in God and improved their relations between them, between Adam and Chavero, but that's it. And the Christianity made use of the book of Jonah to proclaim the mission of Paul, the mission to the nations, and the image of Jesus, who was identified, or they saw Jonah as a prefiguration of the image of Jesus. It's all written already in the New Testament. Already the New Testament in a statement attributed to Jesus himself, that he compared himself to Jonah, and the people of his time, he said that the people of Nineveh behaved better than you did, because the people of Nineveh believed in Jonah, and you do not believe in my mission. A whole issue about Jewish-Christian polemic around the book of Jonah. Now, the idea that Jonah is to be identified with the son of the widow from Tzarfat is ancient idea, has nothing to do with Christianity. Because Habakkuk and etc., almost all of the 12 prophets were identified with other figures. But once Christianity started to make use of the identification between Jonah and the son of the widow, it became dangerous. Because Christianity, as you may know, and I'm simplifying matters, so also Elijah as the prefiguration of John the Baptist. So Elijah gave new life to Jonah. John the Baptist gave new life to Jesus. They made the comparison. It was very difficult to stand against those issues. And Rabbi Yochanan, that's my understanding, did not want the idea to be repeated again in the 3rd century in Tiberia, because people will go out and in the corner will stand some Christian missionary saying the same things. You know, just that. So I think that's the reason for Rabbi Yochanan stopping Rabbi Levi, not letting him finish. I know he insulted by that. He maybe should have gone later and explained to him. He didn't. But anyhow, I think he stopped it because he understood the danger of speaking about Jonah as being somebody who revived from the dead after the third day, ta-ta-ta-ta. You understand why I'm going here? So I think this story about the tension between the scholar and his student and the student of the student is another glimpse into the life of synagogue at that time. That's why I think it happened, could happen only in Tiberia, only in the 3rd century, and only around the issue of Jonah. And that's the way I understand this story. I think that by this understanding, I give it a more depth than the simple understanding of envious old-timer who's envious of his new colleague. I think that something more significant lies in the foundation of this story. Any questions? Anyone called here Yonah wants to remark? You know, Yonah, male Yonah are Ashkenazim, and women Yonah are Yemenite. It's almost a rule. Okay. I don't think so. No. The same. The way he gathered the people by giving a drasha. That's what I understand. Okay. So I think that we now can speak about another story, text number three. Again, the tension between scholars. It's not the main issue of the story, but it's part of the story. We spoke about Elijah, so let's go back to Elijah. Eliyahu. אליהו הווה שכח, used to frequent במטיפתא דרבי. Used to be a student at Rabbi's Academy. Rabbi, it's Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, as you may remember. Second, third century, Tzipori, Bet Shearim, Tveria. And it's not surprising. Elijah of the rabbis is a nice guy. He sits in the corner. When they have any problems, they come to him and answers. You could see Elijah on the street every day. It was not a real mysterious person. That's Elijah of the rabbis. By the way, the big difference between the biblical Elijah and the rabbinic Elijah was never fully explained. Because we may remember the biblical Elijah is a guy, as my friend Yair would say, would never like to meet in the middle of the night when he's angry. Because, you know, in one time he brings the fire down and burn 50 people just because he did not approach him in a very nice way. I mean, it's biblical Elijah is a firm pig, but the Elijah of the rabbis is a nice guy. Each of us, I think, met Elijah at least once in his life. I did also once. You want the story? Tell you later. Elijah used to frequent Rabbi's Academy. Okay. One day, it was new moon, Rosh Chodesh. He was waiting for him, but he failed to come. In the morning, he reached the names, Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Elijah is not here. What happened? He's not here. Said he to him, when he came, Why did you delay? Why didn't you come on time? He replied, don't ask. I had to wait until I awoke Abraham, wash his hands, and he prayed, and I put him back to sleep. Likewise to Isaac and Jacob. Very difficult. You don't know, but on Rosh Chodesh, the three fathers are awakened because they're not really dead. They are sleeping in eternal sleep. Elijah comes to wake them up. It takes time. Abraham is already in Alter Yid to wake him Abraham. And then he has to wash his hands and say Shmonesre and Yaleh V'Yavo and Hallel. And then he puts him back. That's the idea. And then he wakes up Isaac, who's a little younger, and then Jacob. It takes time, so in this time he came too late. But why not awake them together? Nice question. Don't give me this excuse. You know, teachers always say, you tell teachers excuse for coming late. And why didn't you wake them together, let them pray together, and put them back together to sleep? Why not? I feared, he says, that they would wax strong in prayer and bring the Messiah before his time. If I understand correctly, Rabbi Eliyahu is telling Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, what is the way to bring the Messiah now? We want Mashiach now? Very simple. Put Avraham, Yitzhak, Yaakov to pray together and the Mashiach will come at once. So to prevent the coming of the Mashiach before its designated time, he has to do it one by one. But by telling this, Elijah is telling a secret, a real heavenly secret, because the idea of the need to bring the Mashiach as soon as possible, that derived all the Mashiach now people, is part of the Jewish history from ancient times. And we know stories about all kinds of Mashiachim who made use of this need for Mashiach for various reasons. The two famous Mashiachim in ancient time are, of course, Jesus and Bar Kochba, Bar Kosiba. He is called Mashiach in the Talmud Bavli. He claimed about himself to be a Mashiach, and he was found out to be a false Mashiach and even executed in the Bavli. So the rabbis knew the danger of false Mashiach, but here Elijah is giving them the recipe how to bring the Mashiach. So Rabbi goes on by asking, and is there like to be found, and is there like to be found in this world? Good English? Is there like to be found in this world? Is anyone among us who can do the same thing? And I'm quite sure that Rabbi wanted to hear, yes, you, because we know that around the figure of Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi really were created all kinds of ideas of his messianic figure, because at his time it was a great time for the people of Israel. It was quiet and prosperous, and the wounds from the destruction of the temple, from the Bar Kochba revolt, were already healing. But no, the answer is no. What is the answer? Yes, there is Rabbi Chiya and his sons. Let's see, Rabbi, that's what you do. Now you know that you are number one. if Rabbi Chiya and his sons will pray together, the Mashiach will come. And you see in a second that Rabbi Yehuda Anasi swallowed his pride. Can I say it in English too? Swallowed his pride, balayta gava shelo, and in a moment he invited Rabbi Chiya and his sons to pray. By the way, these two sons are, as far as I know, the only twins in the rabbinic world which stayed alive. I mean, usually birth of twins ended with a tragedy, sometimes even a triple tragedy, because of the poor knowledge of how to treat a woman who's giving birth to two. That's why the biblical twins, which is Yaakov Ve'Esav and Peretz Ve'Zerach, is described as Ve'hine, the surprise. But anyhow, they were twins, and Rabbi Chiya and his two sons should now be the prayer leader, and the Mashiach will come. And by the way, in the last week when I spoke about family problems, I mentioned, we didn't touch about it, about the story, about the issue, how many kids a family should have. And the only story I know about it is the story about the mother of these two twins who decided after giving the birth to two that he doesn't want any more kids. And he was trying to convince her husband not to demand from her to continue having children. Anyhow, so let's go back. So he said to him, yes, Rabbi Chiya, and his sons replied. Thereupon, Rabbi proclaimed a fast, a public fast, ta'anit, and you may remember that in the public fast, everybody gathers in the middle of the city, in the tiva, the Torah, and it's tiva, whatever it was, I don't know what was the tiva, whatever, wax, was brought in, and people were prayed together. So he proclaimed a fast, and Rabbi Chiya and his sons were bidden to descend as prayer leaders. Okay, Chazanim. Now, Tfilat Shmonesre. As he, Rabbi Chima, exclaimed, Mashiva Ruach, what happened at this very moment? As a wind blew? At this very moment. Mashiva Ruach, as he said, Mashiva Ruach, Morida Gashem, I was confused. Gashem, you know, the whole. But at least I saw two books in the Hebrew National Library about is it Geshem or Gashem. So I say Moshiva Gashem. Moshiva Gashem. Whereupon the rain descended. When he was about to say Mechayem Itim, the universe trembled, because all the Mitim in the grave started moving, and the whole universe was ready for the day to come in, and that's the most important symbol of the messianic era. And in heaven, it was asked, "Who has revealed our secret to the world?" Elijah, they replied. Elijah was therefore brought and smitten with 60 flaming lashes, in Aramaic, pulsa de nora. It's a word that played some role in the Jewish Israeli history in the last 20 years. The pulse de Nora. So he, Elijah, went, disguised himself as a fiery bear, entered among them and scattered them, and we are still waiting for the Mashiach. The story is basically about the futile attempt to bring the Mashiach. But in the midst of it, you see the tension between, well, not attention, the greatness of Rabbi Yehuda Anasi. He was ready to give Rabbi Chiya the role which he really believed was his. And this, I think, only great person can behave in such a way. And this is another element when we discuss the issues about how the Beit Midrash or the Sanhedrin behaved. If you bring all three stories together, you see that even in this quiet zone, there was tensions between rabbis, teachers, and students, and it's only three stories out of many which deals with this issue. Any questions? No. Now, let's speak about teachers and students. I assume all of you are older than 16? Yes. Even the women? Yeah, happily. Let's see number 5. Tanur Rabbanan. Now, read the Hebrew. Tanur Rabbanan. פעם אחת הוא צריך דבר אחד לתלמידי חכמים אצל מטרונית האחת, שכל גדולי רומי מצויין אצלה. Something is in it from a matronita, a great Roman woman, who all the people of Rome were to be found. אמרו, מי ילך? You can understand the question both ways. Nobody wanted to go. So the question is, who is ready to go? Or everybody wanted to go. And the question was, who will go? I think that the first interpretation is better. No one really wanted to be seen going to Rome to a very, I'm not sure if famous or infamous woman. The idea that all the great people, that all gdolei Romi metsuyim etzla, brings into mind the salons in Europe in the 18th century, which is not always only for music, whatever. I don't know what really happens there. But no, I think nobody wanted to go. And Rabbi Yoshua, ani elech, I'm ready to go. He takes the risk, he is going to Rome. But the surprising fact, halach Rabbi Yoshua v'talmidav, he's not going by himself, he's going and accompanied by all his students. Think about this mission to Rome. Kevan shehigi lepetach beita, chalatz tfilav, ברחוק 400. He removed his tefillin. This is 4 cubits. From that I learned, by the way, that at that time, great rabbis were going with tefillin all day long. And the common people, I'm not sure they even had put tefillin on every day. The Mishnah is not dealing with tefillin. I always was surprised to find out that tefillin does not occupy the mind of the Mishnah. And I think, so how many issues can be connected to the idea of tefillin? How you make them, what you write in them, how do you put them, what happens to somebody who loses? I mean, the Mishnah is totally quite about tefillin. I don't know, maybe it's a proof that at the time of Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, tefillin, at that time was still only a custom of great rabbis. That also can explain, by the way, the few number of tefillin that were found in archaeology. I would expect millions of tefillin. 100,000. How many do we have in the archaeology? 7, 8? Anyhow, he was wearing his tefillin and he removed them at 4 cubits, entered and shut the door. V'na'al ha'delet bifnehem. It's more than shut the door. Na'al ta'delet, he locked. And bifnehem, he wanted them to hear that the door was locked. And it wasn't simple key, as you may remember that time. After he came, out he descended. Sheyatza, yarad, vetaval. When he came out, he descended and had a ritual bath. 3 words in Hebrew, a whole sentence in English. Achar sheyatza, yarad, vetaval. After he came out, he descended and had a ritual bath in front of his students. He were watching him taking, going to the mikveh, and learn with disciples, and start learning Torah. And they said nothing. Said he to them, when I removed my tefillin, of what did you suspect me? בשעה שחלצתי תפילין, במה חשדתוני? He puts into their mind the word of חשד. What did you suspect me of? He saw me going into a room with a woman, infamous woman, and putting my tefillin outside and locking the door. What did you suspect me? We thought, our master mother reasons, let not sacred words enter a place of uncleanness. When I shut the door, of what did you suspect me? כשנעלתי את הדלת במה חשדתוני, אמרנו, שמא דבר מלכות יש בינו לבינה. We said, maybe there's an affair of state with her, a secret, a political secret. You don't want to be disturbed. And בשעה שירדתי ותבלתי, במה חשדתוני? See, 3 times he put the word חשד in their mind. Because I would say that I would suspect. We thought, perhaps some spittle, what's the word, spurted? Spittle, right? From her mouth upon the rabbi's about the rabbi's garments, and by that it was defiled because tumah. And then he says ha avoda by the temple. He's swearing by the temple. exclaimed he to them, it was just so. כך היה. ואתם, כשם שדנתוני לזכות, just as you judge me favorably, המקום, God, may he judge you favorably, ידין אתכם לזכות, and we learn from the importance of לדון everyone, to judge everyone, in favorably and not other way. Why I like this story? Just because the idea of taking the students with him, didn't have to do that. He wanted to teach them. He wanted to teach them by the way he behaved so bluntly, locking the door, going to the mikveh, asking them, what did you suspect me? That's the way a teacher should really arouse the students' curiosity and teach them all kinds of ideas, especially the idea of לדון, הבד דן את חברך לכף זכות. Always look for the positive side of everything. Something I learned from, would you believe, from a taxi driver in Egypt, a local taxi driver in Egypt, when I was teaching in Egypt years ago, when it was still possible, the Israeli Academy sent me for a week and my wife to give two talks on the Nile, on Moshe Rabbeinu, of all places. And I had a driver, and he spoke a little English, and he took me around Cairo and to see the pyramids, whatever. And suddenly we saw a car coming against us in one-way street. I said, look. I said, well, he doesn't know. And then somebody was passing out on the right side in a very dangerous way. He said, well, he's a doctor running to the hospital for an operation. And then at the night, somebody with no lights, oh, poor guy, doesn't know that his lights are off. I mean, every time I was looking for, have I done et chaval kaf schut? And that's the idea of the story, by the way, and I learned my lesson as well. So a teacher, student, is a nice relationship, but you have to force your students, take them with you everywhere. Shimush chachamim, we spoke about it, about Rabbi Akiva and the way he was meshamesh chachamim, and this story teaches, beside the idea of judging everybody in a favorable way, also about how a teacher should behave to his students. But I think my most favorite story, if you didn't ask me about my Elijah, will be number one. Again, story not well known. I hope that some of the stories which I taught tonight were new for some of you. Rabbeinu hava avar al Simonia. Rabbi was passing Simonia. Rabbi is always Rabbi Yehuda Anasi. He was passing by Simonia. We know where Simonia is, near Nahalal of today, in the valley of Israel valley, not far from Nahalal. When its inhabitants, Yatsu anshei Simonia likrato, amru lo, Rabbi, ten lanu adam sheyehem makre, ומשנה אותנו ודן דיננו. They need somebody who will teach them Bible, מקרא, and Mishnah, and be a judge. Probably a small place could not afford both functions, so they're kolboinik. That's something I learned when I was in America, kolboinik. You're a preacher, you tokei bashofar, you beg a brit milah if needed, and you are everything. Small communities cannot afford more than a kolboinik. So they need a kolboinik. He gave them נתן להם את לוי בן סיסי. Please pay attention, it's not Rabbi Levi ben Sisi. He gave them just a student to Rabbanut. I hope that nobody here will be now insulted. A student to Rabbanut, not a rabbi, not a full ordained rabbi. Levi ben Sisi. And maybe because of that, they erected a great platform, עשו לו בימה גדולה, והושיבוהו בה. The first Shabbat, they erected a great platform and set him upon it. You see the picture in the synagogue, the new rabbi, so to speak, in the midst of the synagogue, great platform. And Hoshivu Huba venitalmu mimeno divrei Torah. And he forgot some of his learning. Later on, we understand why. It can be just simple of Pachat Kahal, fear. What about the Pachat Kahal? Stage fright, okay. Pachat bima, okay, stage fright. But we don't know yet why. They ask him three questions. Now, it was common in that time to ask a question to the rabbi in order to give him an idea how to start his sermon. We have in rabbinic literature about 250 examples of small, short sermons which begin with the question to the rabbi, Yelamdeinu Rabbeinu ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta. Usually simple questions. How old should it be a boy when he's circumcised? What can you do or not do on a Shabbat? Or can you do that on a Shabbat or not? Very simple answer, because the answer is always no, you know. No, you cannot do it on Shabbat, but simple questions. But see what's happening here. They ask him an unfair question. How can a woman whose fingers, in Hebrew, Shalu shalosh shelot, gidemet, bameh hi choletzet. How a woman who has no fingers, how can she perform chalitza? Because she need to take the shoe from the foot of her brother-in-law. How can she do it if she has no fingers? It's unfair questions. I'll tell you why. What is the chances of a woman who needs chalitza and has no... Well, the halakha has to give answer to that. The halakha covers everything. And I'm not surprised that a rabbi could answer, but it's not a fair question to ask a student, a rabbinical student, the first time he's asked anything in front of his future congregation. Gidemet bameh choletzet lo yeshivan. He did not answer them. Raka dam hayevama. Mau. What if the yevama spit blood? As you may remember, in the ceremony of chalitza, she's supposed to spit on the floor saliva. What happens if she is sick and there's not saliva but blood? Is it a proper chalitza? It's an unfair question as well. What does so they said, Amrin, Dilma, Bar Agadahu. Maybe he's not an halachic person, maybe not Agadah. Let's ask him something about the biblical verse, how the agadic explanation of the verse will be. It's nice, you didn't have to be both halachic and agadic person. Some people are known from the knowledge of halacha, and some people were known from the knowledge of agadah. You may remember the famous story about Rabbi Akiva, once tried to give an agadah and was told, Malecha etzel agadah. What are you looking here in the agadah? It's not your field. On the other hand, we have rabbis who have nothing about halachic issues, but they are usually the agadic person. So maybe it's not halachic. Let's ask him about a verse. V'ma shalu oto? Shalu k'ra'e. They ask him about a verse. Ma'u dichtiv? Ma'u dichtiv? Et ha'rashum b'chtav emet. What do you mean? That which is inscribed, rashum, in the writing of truth. You have to understand that behind the Hebrew sense, the idea that emet is something firm, which is unmovable, and rashum is only roshem. What's roshem? Impact, impression. So not something which is fully formed or whatever. How can it be something both rashum, only vague impression, at the same time also emet? And he didn't know, couldn't answer them. Kevan shera'a shetzarato tzara, I signed for him, of course. Kevan shera'a shetzarato tzara, ishkim baboker, Sunday morning, והלך לו אצל רבינו. He came back to Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. I assume with a long face. אמר לו, מה עבדון בך בני סימוניה? What did the people of Simonia did to you? He inquired. אל תזכירני צרתי. Do not remind me of my troubles, he rejoined. They asked me three questions and I could not answer them. So Rabbi now is asking him, אמר לו, and what were they? ומה אינון? What were the questions? First one, אמר לו, גדמת במי חולצת. אמר לו, ולא היית יודע להשיב? Yeah, יודע להשיב. אמר לו, yeah, I know the answer. אפילו בשיניה, אפילו בגופה. Okay? She can use her teeth or any other limb of her body between her ברכיים, between her... knees or whatever, or between her, whatever. Yeah, she could. That's the answer. What was the second question? Raka, if a yebama spat blood, could you really not answer it? I know. If it contained a speck of saliva, the action is valid, replied. And if not, it is invalid. Further, that which is inscribed in the writing of truth. If truth, why inscribed? Inscribed, למה? אם אמת, למה רשום? אמר לו, ולא היית יודע להשיב? אמר לו, I know, רשום קודם גזירה. It's before the decree is sealed. It is truth, once it has been definitely decreed. Okay, so if God said anything in the beginning, it's just vague impression. But once it's emet, it's inscribed. Then why didn't you? למה לא השבת להם כשם שהשבת לי? אמר לו, what can I do? עשו לי בימה גדולה and set me upon it. He answered, and that made me conceited, that's the word? Conceited. I don't know what's the meaning in English. And in the Hebrew, tafat ruchi. My spirit were above me, so elevated for me. וניעלמו ממני דברי תורה. I don't know if it's good English for that, but I forgot my learning. The fact that he was now standing for the first time, maybe stage fear. I don't know what, but the question here is, did they do it purposely? Did they want to embarrass him by asking this question? Or did they really want to know how great the rabbi is? I would say they were insulted by the fact that he was sent to them just a student, rabbinical student, who was not yet fully ordained, and that's why they made whatever they did, and he came back and taught Ari a great lesson, okay? That, the pride can be disastrous if you are not fully aware of what you're going to teach. And again, nice story, I think, part of life, Simonia, a rabbi, and his audience. And I learned a lot from this story. It happens to be many times that I lose the word like pride for a second, and then I feel like Rabbi Levi Ben Sisi. Okay? Okay. So I think we have to finish by text number 2. And the next story we leave for next week. Number 2. A story is told, Maaseh Beruchel Echad. A story is told about a peddler. We have to see the Hebrew, because Rochel, I know Rochel is a peddler, but the word Rochel in Hebrew brings into mind Rechilut, which means gossip. And we know that there is a connection between Rochel and Rechilut, because we know what the function of the Rochel was at that time. Because the Rochel, the peddler, used to go around the towns in the vicinity of Sepphoris. We know Tzipori, it was a city, Tzipori, Sepphoris. And then there were small towns. I think Ayarot is not good explanation. It's villages, not towns, villages around Tzipori, 10 houses here, 15 here, 20 here, you know, for agriculture, whatever. And the Rochel used to go to sell whatever he sold. But at the same time, he was the news. He told everything that's happening. So it can be seen as part of Rechilut, but this is a very important function to make a connection between the city and the small villages around it. And our Rochel was going around crying out, and you see the story was in Hebrew, now it changes into Aramaic. Who wishes to buy the elixir, that's it? Sorry, elixir of life. He is selling something that once you buy it, you taste it, you live forever. I don't know, maybe holy water from Baba Sali, maybe oil in which dead mouse was kept for 7 years. I have no idea. But he is selling some kind that can promise you eternal life. At the same time, Rabbi Yanai, and you can see that Rabbi Yanai, the third line, the Hebrew Yanai, Yud Nun Yud Yud, that's the way he was written in Eretz Israel, not with an Aleph. Rabbi Yanai, the head of the yeshiva in his place, was sitting and expounding in his room. Again, I don't like the translation, because it said that he was yativ, fourth line, Betraklin Nei, Traklin. The Traklin is not just a room. Traklin is the hall, more than that. That's the place in which you had your guests. It was not everybody could afford a Traklin. He was a rich person, Rabbi and I. In a moment you see that he lived in two banquet hall. It's not bad. Salon. It has 3 beds. That's the meaning of the meaning of triklin, triklion in Greek, three beds in the shape of a chet, in which the guests were sitting or reclining, and this. Right, in Tzipori. That's exactly right. I should have written the mosaic. Okay, so he was sitting. It wasn't mosaic. According to Aramaic, it was in Achbara, but never mind. It's the same idea. So he was sitting in Straklin and studying Torah. And please pay attention to the Aramaic, third line, Al Lehad Achbara. He came to Achbara, and it's important because it's not near Tzipori. This Rochel came for the first time to a place in which he was not known. He came to Achbara, קרב לביתי דרבי ינאי, הווה יתיב ופשט. He learned פשוטו. He learned simple things. He didn't make a drasha, no philosophy, no mythology, no mystic. Just the text as it is in his traklin. He heard him calling out, who desires the exile of life? So he said to him, come here. Again, our make should be come up. He's looking from his window, probably second floor down to the peddler, and come up and sell me it. The peddler, chutzpadik, said, neither you nor people like you need it. It's not for you, not people like you. What people like you? Rabbis, scholars, elite, whatever. It's not for you. It's for the common people. It's not for you. But the rabbi pressed him. And the peddler, to our surprise, went up to him and brought up a book of Psalms and showed him the passage. Mi ha'ish ha'fetz chayim ohev yamim lirot tov. What is written after that? Netzor leshoncha mera usfatecha midaber mirma. Sur mera vaase tov bakeh shalom veratfehu. And the whole story changed our understanding, because when he spoke about a peddler, about selling something which sounds to us as a false medicine, and then his refusal to tell Rabbi Yanai, we could have understood that he is afraid that Rabbi Yanai may expose his wrong behavior, whatever. No, he is a real teacher of moral. Simple meaning. Netzor leshoncha mera. Okay. Keep your tongue from evil. And that will promise you a long life. And what the greatness of Rabbi Yanai, says Rabbi Yanai in the end, Kol yamai hayiti koret ha-mikra hazeh. I read it all my life, maybe in his morning prayer. Kol yamai hayiti koret ha-mikra hazeh ve-lo hayiti yodea heichan hu pashut. Now the word pashut is repeating the pshat. He was reading pshat, but you know that's the simple meaning. That's a key for long life. Do not gossip. Do not say evil. No slander. And he said, Kol yamai. That's the greatest of a rabbi who admits that a simple man can teach him things which he was not aware of. Ad sheba rochel ze, until the peddler came and made it clear. And Rabbi Yanai taught us another idea of Pirkei Avot. Ezu chacham alomed mikol adam. But when I teach this story, sometimes without the text, just on a screen, and each time I bring one line, I really see the people believing that in a moment, Rabbi and I will give him a piece of his mind and prove that he was a fraud, whatever you want to make me. But no, the charlatan, fraud, whatever. No, the story brings us to believe that, but at one moment, everything changes. So the rich person, the Talmid Chacham, the head of the yeshiva, can learn something simple from a simple man. And we, of course, as simple people, can learn from that as well. So I think that I spoke enough for one evening. Now it's Tu Bishvat, so go home and have your made in Turkey, whatever. Next week, B'ezrat Hashem, I'd like to teach some folk stories. It'd be more happy occasion, because folk stories usually are more funny from those we learn today. But I'd like to finish by my encounter with Eliyahu HaNavi, okay? Because I may forget for next week. Elijah HaNavi, where did I meet him? Maybe I told you the story about my first year in university. I didn't tell you a story about my first year in university. It was 1972. Tell the story about my first year. 1972, Mr. Avigdor Shinan just finished his BA, not even an MA. I was honored to give a course under the name of Professor Heinemann, my late professor, and me. And I was told that if you have not, don't have five students, the course will not be open. That's the time before computer, before registration. The first day of the class, courses, people went to study what they want. And if you can look back at the book of the Shnaton, list of courses of 1972, you can see that in one course about humor in rabbinic literature, another course about love in rabbinic literature, you find the greatest subject of all, reading of Vayikra Rabba. That's me. I was insulted that I was designated a room of 40 seats. I believe that B'nai Umar will not be enough. Vayikra Rabba, the greatest midrash ever. People will want to come to my class. I prepared a great class. I came to the first meeting, four students. It's not a legend because one of the four students is a professor in Haifa, and she also remembered the four students. And suddenly I understood a word which I read many times in rabbinic literature, maze gecholesht. Chalesha da'ato. Suddenly it's like a balloon who loses all its air. Well, I started teaching in the middle of the class. The door opens. In this case, I was very happy. And an old guy, nice beard, white beard, blue eyes, blue beret, came in, put his name on the list, stayed till the end of class. And at the end of class, I ran like, you know, I was so happy to the secretary, high five, high five, high five. Never saw him again. Now, I was clever enough to see what name is signed there. So you can choose two possibilities. It could be Mr. Elijah Navi, or maybe the author of Vayikra Rabba, who came in order to... Whatever, I remember, that's a true story, not a folk story. Thank you. See you next week.
This is a production of the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies. For more original Torah content, visit elmad.pardes.org.